Bet the board.
What do you mean you don't bet?
I mean, I don't bet. You know, I don't care. I don't. I never have, and I never will.
Yeah, right.
I'll bet you $20 I can get you gambling before the end of the day.
You owe me $15,000, pal.
Pay him. Pay that man his money.
It's the Bet the Board podcast.
God likes me. He really, really likes me.
In the end, I wound up right back where I started. I could still pick winners, and I could still make money for all kinds of people back home. And why mess up a good thing?
Here's Payne Insider and Todd Furman.
Welcome into the Bet the Board podcast, powered by BetOnline.ag. NFL Week 2 officially in the books. I am your fearless leader, Todd Furman, joined as always by my esteemed colleague and co-host, the one, the only, Payne Insider. Payne, what's going on, man?
Not too much. NFL is here.
NFL is indeed here, although you wouldn't know it watching that Monday Night Football game with the Giants' inability to pick up yards consistently. What do we do with the dumpster fire that's become the Big Blue Wrecking Crew?
Not really sure. This week is pretty telling, looking at that line. And nobody has bit yet. So I want to see internally how they're going to respond to Ben McAdoo calling them out. It wasn't done the best of ways. Just put it that way. So I want to see if that locker room is receptive to how he sent that message.
That will be one of the games that we cover in greater detail. Of course, the Giants on the road to take on the Philadelphia Eagles in divisional action. Detroit on the other side of the coin, Payne. I know they have a prove-it type scenario unfolding on Sunday, playing host to the Atlanta Falcons. But were you impressed with the Lions, or just more Giants ineptitude from what we saw?
Yeah, it was a lot to do with the Giants. Obviously, Matthew Stafford was fantastic, but the Giants sorely missed the two components of their defense that were out in Janoris Jenkins, in Goodson at linebacker. That played a huge role. And then obviously, once the game starts to maybe tilt a little bit in the Giants' favor, you get the huge special teams return, and that just ended at that point. So the Lions continue to rack up wins.
And Matt Prater will not be receiving a holiday greeting card from anyone that is a Bet the Board listener. Not quite sure how his 56-yard field goal defied physics, clanking off the bar, rolling in, much to our chagrin. But if that's what it's going to take to beat us on some of our NFL sides in total this season, it's going to be a damn fine year. And two guys that had it.
I mean, I hated that. It stinks.
You hated the field goal?
No,
you
mean the field goal. Yeah, I mean, it happens, right? Yeah. But I think the best. It was obviously the right side. I think there was other dynamics that took place in that first half. You know, you get the third and 12.
Third
and 12 jump ball for a touchdown. You get the third and goal from the 8, touchdown to Ebron. You get an Eli turnover in his own end. And then, you know, there's coaching ineptitude there. And you made the very good point as we discussed that game. It probably looks a little different if Ben McAdoo is calling a timeout there after the screen pass to Golden Tate. We want to, as a coach, you always want to force a decision on the opposing coach, right? So if you call a timeout there, there's now well over a minute to go. Do they attempt a field goal that's 56, 57 yards, knowing it puts the Giants up in scoring position right before the end of the half if you miss? But you let the clock bleed all the way down, Lions call timeout, whatever it is, and now there's just 30 seconds left. I say, hey, you know, let's the way the Giants' offense is operating, I'm going to now attempt this field goal. So, you know, McAdoo's calling everybody out, and he's responsible for a lot of the ineptitude that's going on with the Giants.
Deflect, deflect, deflect. It's kept people employed in the corporate environment for years, no different in the world of the NFL. And Payne, there were a couple guys, though, that had tremendous weekends in the Bet the Board 5K football free roll. The problem being is we weren't able to decide a clear winner based on tiebreakers alone.
No. Right now we have two guys that went a perfect 5-0, and then the tiebreaker was the points in Monday Night Football. Both of them a point away from the 35-point tally that the Giants and Lions put up. So we have Matt DeLau and then Phil underscore the lip. We will have to come to the final tiebreaker, which we will post later today on the Bet the Board Pod Twitter account. There'll be a mini live video to determine the winner. So that will go up at some point today on Bet the Board Pod. So look out for that, boys.
So congrats to those guys and for everybody else. Make sure you turn in your picks. Even if you missed a week, there's still plenty of weekly prizes available from now through the end of the regular season. So try and take full advantage of that and sport your Bet the Board gear with pride. Dave Mason will join us in a little bit to talk about how the books fared for week two and offer some professional positions and or public stances that we've seen in the games. Of course, the Thursday night football preview between the barn burner and heavily anticipated matchup between the Los Angeles Rams and San Francisco 49ers will close the show. Payne, but before we get there, let's head across the pond for an early Sunday morning kickoff with the Jacksonville Jaguars making their annual pilgrimage to London, this time to take on the Baltimore Ravens. Number right now at betonline.ag, you're looking at the Ravens, a 3.5-point favorite total on this game, 39.5. We mentioned early in the week the big injury concern for Baltimore, no Marshall Yanda, lost for this season. But how do we even begin to go about handicapping this game and where we've seen the number go since it's open?
You know, it's the 9:30 game, so here we are talking about the Jacksonville Jaguars again. You know, Monday's podcast was very good in terms of, hey, this is where the market's going to be going. We told you sharp money would be on Jacksonville. It's now gone from 4.5 down to as low as 3.5. And it's just a combination of a lot of things. You have the familiarity with the trip. Jacksonville signed that deal, I believe it was in 2013, Todd. Correct me if I'm wrong. I think it was 2013. So they're going to play every single game.
Yeah,
they signed it in 2013, so they're going to have a road game in London every single year. And so this is their fifth trip. It takes...
Payne, it is a home game in London. You got that part incorrect.
That is right. It could be home, right? Khan, I think, is the owner, owns the football team there. They're now talking about building a practice facility just for these trips for Jacksonville. I don't think they're going to leave Jacksonville. He just put like $20 million into renovations and like, you know, the townspeople put in like $90 million. So they're not going to be leaving anytime soon. Anyways, back to this game. You know, it takes time getting used to this kind of travel, I think. The food, the hotel, the trip to the game, practicing in a new facility. We are all creatures of habit. And so I always say this just because some guys like to hang posters on the walls of athletes, like they put their pants on one leg at a time, just like us. They're humans. So that's the key here, the familiarity for Jacksonville. You also have your hated division rival, the Steelers, on deck. Are they really looking forward to this trip across the pond after, you know, they're 2-0, they're fat and happy, and now you're peaking to Pittsburgh? The second thing here is, and I've been carrying this torch since our preview podcast, this Ravens defense, they're elite. And through 2 weeks, number one in defensive efficiency, they've forced 10 turnovers in two games. So if you've watched them on film, they're lightning fast. It's pretty fun to watch. But they've beat up on the dregs of Ohio, right? With Cincinnati in Cleveland, you expect turnover aggression. There's just no way you can continue to force 5 turnovers a game defensively, although I think Blake Bortles will give them a real run for their money here.
When does he not when it comes to ball security?
Is Flacco 100% healthy? Probably not. You mentioned it. Marshall Yanda is out. All of these reasons are why Jacksonville has seen professional money. But I want to kind of say this. I don't think I'm personally running to invest here, especially at a less attractive number. Jacksonville is still an abortion, right? And when I looked at the All-22 this week, Allen Robinson is a huge guy that they are missing here. And I think when we talk about the impact of number one receivers, you have the obvious thing to the naked eye, right? It's catching the ball. It's creating touchdowns, things of that nature. Yards, which most people don't see, is the space number one receivers create for the rest of the team. And last week's game against Tennessee, that was played in a phone booth. There's just no room for that run game to really operate. And when you start to talk about the Jaguars playing in these three wide receiver sets, their third wide receiver is now some kid named Keelan Cole. He's an undrafted free agent. There's not a lot to love here about the Jacksonville offense.
There's not a lot to love about most things relating to Jacksonville. The total right now that sits at 39.5.
Just came down as we hit record on this podcast, 40.5. So there is probably not, when the majority of the market opens, that there's going to be an ability to get a 20 in the first half. Out west, there is a 20. that likely is going to be gobbled as we're talking about this right now.
Yeah, I don't think by the time that's gonna last.
We finish recording in an hour and it's produced in an hour and it's out, like that's likely long gone.
And the unfortunate part is I don't have a mobile app for that one casino currently hanging at 20, so I will not be leaving the middle of the show to go chase down a number, much to the chagrin of my bankroll. From a game across the pond to a game taking place in the Carolinas, where the Panthers are a 6-point favorite for a divisional matchup against the New Orleans Saints. Total at betonline.ag, 46.5. New Orleans limps into this game at 0-2, but it's really the Carolina Panthers, despite a 2-0 record, that are limping in without the services of tight end Greg Olsen and a number of other injuries that they're still dealing with for the Panthers.
I think the injuries are the key thing to touch on. So, professional money getting out ahead on the under, with the Saints far from in rhythm. Cam is still shaking off rust with that offseason that saw him recover from a shoulder surgery, and then he just attempted two passes in the preseason. Now he's without Greg Olsen, who he's never been without before. That's his security blanket. That's his big target over the middle. Offensively, the Saints aren't in rhythm. Their left tackle, Teron Armstead, right tackle, Zach Strief, both missed last week, haven't practiced yet this week. You are going to have to monitor that. They still haven't figured out the proper snap distribution at the running back position. I know Bill Belichick makes it look simple. It appears Sean Payton is having a tougher time juggling these three backs. When I started to dig into this, one of the underlying factors here is A.J. Klein. Specifically A.J. Klein, a little bit Ted Ginn Jr. They were with Carolina last year. They're now both with New Orleans this year. The Panthers, they played last week against their former coach, Sean McDermott. They had to change how they called plays, change their signals. Now again this week, they have to do it. They are coming out and saying, hey, A.J. Klein's one of the smartest guys we've had in this locker room. We have to change our entire set of signals, change how they called plays, change their audible names. They're going to have to change all that this week. I get these guys are professionals, but they're now, I mean, they're not brain surgeons, right? So this is now the third week in a row you're changing your verbiage.
Yep.
Third straight week you're changing your verbiage. I think we're going to see professional money here on the Saints, especially if some of these injuries come around. I don't know the status of the two tackles. Right now, it's not looking great. Thursday and Friday is really the day, the biggest day. We call it the moving day in the injury world. If you can get out there just a little bit and then a little bit more on Friday, it's usually a good signal. If they don't practice today, it starts to get really, really dicey. And I think the other thing here is we're talking about the two tackles, which is huge. But defensively, Sterling Moore, Marshawn Lattimore, they have not practiced at all yet this week either. So two starting guys in the secondary for the Saints as well.
What do we make of the Panthers' start? We know defensive efficiency-wise, number two in the league behind the aforementioned Baltimore Ravens. Do we buy that being sustainable, or is it as much a byproduct of taking on the likes of San Francisco and Buffalo to kick things off?
Well, there you go. Thomas Davis and Luke Kuechly are absolutely fantastic. Julius Peppers seems to be rejuvenated. He's getting after the quarterback. But it's mostly a buy. I mean, they're not going to be horrific. Let's keep this in context. But it certainly helps when you play a San Francisco team that hasn't scored an offensive touchdown and the likes of the Buffalo Bills offense.
That's the nature of the business. It's getting healthy. And as you said, monitor those injuries. It changes the dynamics quite a bit if you wanted to make a case for the Saints being a live underdog on the divisional road, getting just under a touchdown.
That's it, life or death. They're 0-2, and now you got your division game. So if you lose that one, you drop to 0-3, you're about done.
Season hanging in the balance. I mean, not unfamiliar territory for where we've seen the Saints in the past. Not exactly been lights out when it comes to starting the season quickly. Atlanta and Detroit, though, two teams that have started the season quickly, a pair of 2-0 sides. You're looking at the Falcons right now, a 3-point road favorite on the road. Lay $1.05 on the chalk. Total 50.5, overshaded there at minus $1.15 at betonline.ag. Interesting situations unfolding here, Payne. You have Detroit coming off a short week returning home. You have the Atlanta Falcons coming into this game with arguably one of their most impactful defensive players going to be on the shelf.
Man, this is a tougher game. Well, let's just put it this way. We've seen some professional money on Detroit already. Any hook that was available earlier in the week is now gone. We're now trending towards a soft 3. I sure would love to say Detroit is going to regress, holding an under 8 wins ticket. Stafford is playing out of his damn mind right now. I know last year we addressed this a little bit. He lost 17 pounds going into camp. He's down a few more this year. And that threat of him taking off from the pocket is just another added dimension for defenses to have in the back of their minds. And we saw it again on Monday night. When you start to really break down what Stafford's doing through two games, he's graded out the fourth best quarterback in the NFL. He's gone against two defenses we like in Arizona. And I know the Giants weren't fully healthy, as we talked about at the top of this podcast. But he's doing it with an offensive line that's not giving him any time. So he's had the 25th most time to throw the ball. If Stafford's this successful putting up numbers without time, does it look a bit different this week? And not just Vic Beasley, Courtney Upshaw looks like he's going to be out as well. So this is just a very interesting dynamic here. Detroit can really prove their worth. There's some other injuries that you're going to want to monitor as well. Atlanta's right tackle, Ryan Schrader, looks to be out. He's in the concussion protocol. You have to monitor that. He went out on the opening drive against the Packers. His replacement graded out one of the worst performances of all of last week at right tackle. The other dynamic here is you have Darius Slay, who's one of the most underappreciated defensive backs in football. Maybe it's because he plays in Detroit. They're going to at least be able to start the game with an ability to say, hey, Slay, you man Julio Jones, and now we can play the rest of our defense versus your offense even, right? When you don't have to start the game potentially helping your corners on Julio Jones, if he can man Julio, huge edge for Detroit.
When you look at the Lions, their commitment to the ground game, maybe it's Amir Abdullah being healthy and not having a case of fumbleitis. Do we think this is something that Detroit's going to be able to maintain throughout the course of the season, using kind of that two-headed monster with Theo Riddick and Abdullah in the backfield to show a little bit more balance offensively than we saw for extended stretches last year?
You know, they really made a concerted effort to improve that offensive line. They went and get TJ Lang in the offseason, so that's a huge addition. They added a few other parts, so it's going to be a reality as long as Abdullah can stay healthy, which he hasn't shown an ability to do. So that I think Riddick, as we saw late in that game, he started to get a lot of the carries once Abdullah got worn down a little bit and he had the little ankle injury there. Riddick is really not the best between the tackles runner. He's just a better guy out of the backfield. Abdullah is certainly the better runner. It's going to come down to if he can stay healthy. I don't think he can sustain a full workload throughout the course of 17 weeks with his size and stature. But if he can, they're going to have a little bit of a ground game.
And it all depends on balance. As long as you can force defenses to respect the threat of a run, even a little bit goes a long way. But Payne, a team that hasn't been able to force defenses to respect the run, the New York Football Giants, and they find themselves 6-point underdogs on the road at Lincoln Financial Field this weekend against the Philadelphia Eagles. Total in this game, 42 right now at betonline.ag. We talked about the Saints 0-2 staring down the barrel of the gun going on the road in division. The Giants, a very similar scenario here, and this is a game that we talked about. Look-ahead numbers had this one, Eagles -3.5. The Giants probably have seen the most adjustment to their power rating of any team in the National Football League through 2 weeks.
When you talk about this from a market perspective, you really have to respect what this is telling you, right?
That the Giants stink?
Yes, but this is usually a game in this spot pro bettors are fighting each other to get to. There was some 3 on the look-ahead market. You can now access 7-20 at a few shops, yet nobody has taken the bait. To me, that's really telling. Will it come eventually? Maybe. But in today's market, there's usually not time to wait on something that's 4 points off. That's 4-point difference from a week ago. And so far, no one's bit. To me, that's a telling sign.
I mean, the Giants are not a good football team right now. They're struggling offensively. You mentioned the defensive injuries. You have to keep tabs on Janoris Jenkins and Goodson being out there because they showed an inability to do what you'd expect a Giants to do. And the one thing, Payne, I was blown away with in digging into some of the numbers, they're 26th in defensive efficiency through the first 2 weeks, and all we hear about is how good this Giants defense really is and supposed to be.
Yeah, it has not been great so far this year. They've been on the field a bunch. There's some internal issues going on. We had two guys that are, you know, they're weak at linebacker. So when Goodson goes out, that's a big deal. Jenkins, when he goes out, that's a big deal because it looks like Eli Apple's regressed. He's still looking for that 3rd and 12 ball Matthew Stafford threw. I will say this, though. I have heard there is optimism. Both Goodson and Jenkins are going to play this week. Air quotes. It feels like one-week injuries is what I was told. You're 0-2. It's a division game. I think you have to probably be in a casket to miss this week. I don't know where this team goes. Eli is certainly on the decline. That's evident. But his offensive line isn't really helping him at all. They're 26th in adjusted sack rate. So Eli right now is being sacked on over 10% of his dropbacks. He's been running for his life. He is a guy that we know doesn't do well with pressure, doesn't like contact, ducks out of throws. But he's also not getting any help, right? Whether it's the offensive line or whether it's his receivers, we saw Marshall drop an absolute dime down the sideline this past week. I know Odell gritted one out. He did end up playing Monday night. The market really didn't take a huge effect because they knew he's kind of a shell of himself. I know he led the team in receptions with 4, but just watch him. He's gingerly running out there. Everything is of the short variety. He's falling to the ground before he's even being contacted by a defender most of those times. So now you have to look at Evan Ingram dealing. He's in the concussion protocol. That's one spot where that Eagles defense is a little susceptible. They have a tough time covering tight ends. So if Ingram's out, just another weapon, another missing thing from this Giants offense. And it's the reason why we started this with saying there hasn't been an appetite from professionals despite this number being really, really inflated. So for me right now, I just don't have a ton here.
When you look at the Eagles, Payne, I mean, how much differently do we handle road Carson Wentz versus home Carson Wentz?
Have to. I mean, he's significantly better. Now, it's a short sample. One thing I always want to say with the NFL, you constantly have to work your balls off to be ahead of the market because a lot of things that are going on, it's such small sample sizes because you don't play a lot of games because there's so much turnover where virtually every single year, 30% of your 30 of your roster's turning over, you're losing a coach or two. So you have to be ahead of the market where like trends and things like that don't really play a huge role. But Wentz has shown early in his career, he is significantly better at home. And this game, Goodson is going to be vital if he can come back as we see his replacement, the young kid there from San Diego State. He doesn't have a prayer in coverage. So Ertz is going to have a field day if Goodson doesn't play.
And this total right now sits at 42
just
and a half.
Just came down, not really too.
Yeah, it did. It came down.
Secondary, and this is kind of thing. This is one of those things where we're looking at it and we're saying, oh, okay. Like, this makes sense. I get it. Like, I could play this game under. But if Wentz comes out hot and then it forces the Giants to play catch-up, that's bad things. Because, one, we know Eli's going to get his ass kicked in the pocket and he's going to turn the ball over. Or, two, they're going to take advantage of that Eagles secondary that's still a train wreck right now. So, professional money is on the under. I just haven't done it yet.
Be interesting to see where this number ultimately settles. A game that we've seen a lot of line movement on, hopefully we can get Dave Mason's take to figure out exactly where professionals have plunked down their cash. Seattle and Tennessee in the afternoon time slot, and a game that I may say might be the most fascinating of everything on an otherwise lean slate. You're looking at the Titans right now, a 3-point home favorite. You do need to lay $1.20 if you want to back the dog at betonline.ag. Total here, 42.5. Payne, we know about the Seahawks. They're averaging less than 11 points per game. They can't keep Russell Wilson upright. They did get a bit of a bright spot. Carson appears to have emerged as a true bona fide number one back, at least for 1 week.
You're hoping.
But, yeah, I mean, I'm hoping. I mean, took a little fantasy flyer there. We'll hope that he pays some
fantasy flyer. That could be a segment.
Yeah, he pays some. I don't think I want to get into fantasy around here.
No, not for us.
We got enough. Yeah, we got enough to cover in these parts. Tennessee, though. I mean, we saw them put together one great half of football, the second half against Jacksonville. But for six quarters of the season, they've been pretty average to below average offensively. What are our expectations going into a pivotal game that I'll make the case, should the Titans have lost to Jacksonville last week, we'd be talking about Tennessee obviously as a home dog where the number opened, and maybe a much more compelling case than it is to lay a full field goal with them in their own building.
I mean, the second half was really a byproduct of Blake Bortles starting to turn the ball over. Certainly, they got into a little bit of better rhythm offensively. But a lot of that opportunity was given because of Blake Bortles. Both these teams right now, I'm not quite sure what they are. The line movement has been absolutely ridiculous on this game. And I said it becomes a different handicap. So while we have seen sharp money on Tennessee, right, we can all look at the market and determine that. Does it become a different handicap now with Seattle at +3? And I think it does a little bit. Seattle's got to probably feel fortunate heading into week 3 not being 0-2. When you start to look at what Seattle is, I think that's the bigger question mark. Only the Texans and Colts are worse, averaging fewer yards per play offensively. It's been that bad.
Not a good look.
We know the offensive line is an issue, but to kind of just put this in perspective, out of 32 teams, the Seahawks O-line is allowing Russell Wilson the 28th most time to throw. If it wasn't for his mobility, I mean, he would just be a sitting duck. There's a ton of new parts on that offensive line, and none of them are really overly talented. We keep hitting on George Fant going down in the preseason at left tackle, and by no means was he this fantastic left tackle, but he was good enough. His replacement through the first two games, he's graded out the 72nd best left tackle out of 72 qualifying left tackles. It's
doesn't take a math wizard to figure out that
that's last, one. Right?
I think
it's
so.
It's not just
last.
The tackle position either. You'd start to look at the interior of that line where the guards are. The two guards have allowed 3 sacks and 16 quarterback pressures. The offensive line's the goddamn Titanic right now, and it's going down. They have a Pro Bowl center in Justin Britt. That's about it. He's got 2 pylons to the left, 2 pylons to the right. I don't want to overreact because the slow starts are usual for the Seahawks. They have not been 2-0 since 2013, so they seem to drop an early game or two, and then they start to progress offensively. But this feels a little bit different.
Defensively, the Seahawks were gashed last week as well by Carlos Hyde. Richard Sherman calling out some of his teammates this weekend saying, hey, you know we expect ourselves to be able to do on that side of the ball. We can't worry about the other side. Do we think the Seahawks defense is ripe for the picking, or do we think that still has to be the unit that they're going to rely on should Seattle become the bona fide front runner in the NFC, or at least the contender that we anticipated they would be coming into the season?
We hit on this a little bit last year about their efficiency metrics not matching up with their success rate metrics. They were giving up a ton of successful plays. We thought it was a byproduct of Earl Thomas going down. So far, some early struggles, mostly on the ground right now. They are allowing run plays to grade out at a 47% success rate. That's 21st in the NFL. There's a reason they went and got Sheldon Richardson from the Jets. They thought that would help a little bit. So far, it hasn't. And again, they haven't faced the greatest slate of run offenses, right? The Packers, virtually a pass team only at this point. I know Ty Montgomery's been fantastic through the first 2 weeks. But the 49ers, there's some concerns on this defense. I thought, you know, they were all healthy. I think they'll get it turned around, but we will see.
Again, this game will take place in the afternoon time slot, 4:05 Eastern. Would encourage folks with Sunday ticket to check this out. We're going to learn an awful lot about the Titans' expectations for the season. Can they live up to them? And if Seattle's problematic offensive line will continue to plague this
Corey Davis is out,
team.
Right?
Corey Davis looks to be out dealing with hamstring
Jimmy
injury,
Graham's
I believe.
Question
is,
mark as well.
Yep, he was listed as iffy for practice. I don't know exactly where that falls into that questionable to doubtful type scenario, but Jimmy Graham, and there was one other Seattle injury I don't have in front of me. I don't think it was to a marquee player by any stretch, but it'll impact a little bit of their depth. West Coast game between a coaching master and a coaching midget, at least through the first two games of his NFL
harsh
career in charge. The Kansas City Chiefs, a field goal favorite, lay $1.25 at BetOnline.ag. Total here, 47.5. It is the LA Chargers staring down an 0-2 start. 2 games they lost at the Bell with field goal attempts gone awry. Meanwhile, here come the Kansas City Chiefs, 2-0, with the league's most efficient offense, at least through 120 minutes of football.
Not really sure where to start here. I mean, this seems to be the Chargers in a nutshell the last few seasons. They can't get over the hump. They play these teams close. They play good for 55 minutes, and they just can't figure out a way to win games. And that's the reality of what it's been. When you talk about a home field advantage, I think we're ahead of the market on that last week. There really isn't one. Philip Rivers came out this week and said as soon as the Dolphins hit that field goal, the stands erupted. So there's really no home field advantage there. That's why we've seen this number three and a half. I would love to make a case for the Chargers. I'm not able to do it quite yet. Maybe once the hooks start to reappear at a normal price, I'm going to be in. What I have seen so far is a rededicated Alex Smith. It appears that Mahomes nipping on his heels has really increased his level of play. He's number one against the blitz. So he's recognizing it, it looks like. It's coming up pre-snap. He's getting it out quick, post-snap. He's been very impressive. I'm not sure this will last, but if it does, and this is scary, the Chiefs have a real shot to make some noise, not just in their division, but winning it all. He's number two right now in deep throws. Again, 2 week sample size. He's probably not going to finish that right, but so far, so good. Right now, number one overall in offensive efficiency. And when you start to look at who they've played, you know, we think Jim Schwartz, he's a wizard defensively. The Patriots, I know they're a mess defensively, but Bill Belichick, defensive guy. So Alex Smith has been fantastic so far.
You mentioned Alex Smith's success pain and kind of a rejuvenated, revitalized, whatever adjective we want to use to describe him. When we look at the Chargers secondary, do we expect Verrett to be out there and all hands on deck type effort from them?
It's a week-to-week thing, I'm told. So he's dealing with the knee injury that gave him some issues in the offseason. Looks like it's flared back up on him. This would feel like a game he tries to give it a go. So if he can't, it's certainly somewhat significant. But I'm told it's week-to-week. Has not practiced yet. Again, today's the big day if we can find out if a lot of these guys are playing.
And, of course, the Chargers would love to get the monkey off their back, not having won in this series going all the way back to 2013. Point spread futility, not quite the same as the straight-up record, so they have been able to get the cash at least in a meeting or two since then. To the Sunday nighter, where Oakland travels across the country for what feels like the second time in 3 weeks. I know the trip to Tennessee, not quite the same, but still out on the road for a long road trip. Where the Raiders are a three-point favorite at BetOnline.ag. Total here, 54.5. The Redskins fresh off a win themselves in Los Angeles. Oakland, of course, with the Denver Broncos on deck. Most compelling handicapping angle or a situational edge go to either team in this one, Payne?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a tough spot here for Oakland. This is now their second trip to the East Coast in 3 weeks. So, and you're looking down the barrel of the Denver Broncos. So we shall see, but Washington is coming back from the West Coast as well. When I start to look at this, I wanted to make a case for the over. And I think we will see the market move in that direction. But what has made me pause so far is Gruden has changed what he's doing a little bit. Last week he came out and said, hey, we need to be more balanced. We need to figure out how to run the ball a little bit more, be a little bit more successful. And a lot of times when Gruden says stuff like that, you don't really take him at his word because he likes to just chuck the ball. Well, last week they came out and ran the ball. 39 run plays, 29 pass plays. If you see something like that this week, it's going to be tough to go over that number. Really, what this is going to come down to is style of play. If Oakland can get out fast, it's going to force Gruden, and it's not a tough persuasion to get Gruden to want to throw the ball. You know, that's what makes this total so tough. If Washington can kind of keep it close early on or get out ahead themselves, they can slow this game down, run the ball, keep Oakland's offense off the field. But if Oakland comes out, again, you're not going to have to twist Gruden's arm to throw the ball. One thing I will say here is Oakland's defense, oof, it's bad. It's a bad defense. And they're basically, their offense is the crutch for that defense. They're getting out ahead and allowing them to be somewhat competent. But right now I'm looking at this Oakland's defense, 26th in efficiency despite facing a predictable Titans offense and the Jets at home. They're allowing 54% of runs to grade out successful. That's 28th in the NFL. They're allowing 48% of passes to grade successful. That's 22nd in the NFL. When you start to back out a lot of the noise and when you start to back out components of a game where, let's just put it this way, where the opposing offense can't dictate what they want to do, right, goes back to all, the Oakland offense getting out to such a lead. It tells the Oakland defense what the opposing offense has to do. But in the first half, when everything's fairly even and that Jets game plan was being able to be used, McCown completed 73% of his passes, averaged 7.5 yards per pass attempt, and had a 125 rating. This Oakland defense is really, really bad. So if they come out a little groggy and Washington can establish that ground game with Pirine, this is going to be somewhat competitive here.
Rob Kelly officially expected to miss this one. I mean, I know we talked about Samaje Perine going
in. He's got a rib
in.
Injury. He's a tough guy.
Knowing the public support pain for Oakland in this spot in a standalone type scenario, does this number get to 3.5 in your opinion?
Yeah, I think it has to. I mean, unless... If it doesn't, it lets you know that there is significant professional money on the dog here, and I think inevitably it will come. I think everyone's holding out for 3.5. I'm not sure the market can stop the public in a spot like this. We've always said the NFL is the one sport where the public has their say, and it's why I've beaten the table and saying, hey, this sport is extremely profitable. It's got the most unsophisticated money in it. And so this is going to be a huge decision for the house, and I think inevitably they're going to get some help, especially at 3.5 from professional bettors. And I think the books have to go there to get that help.
And I think a lot of that, too, will hinge on how the day goes. If you see a number of these road favorites come in, the liability that'll get ratcheted up on Oakland to kind of click those parlays in, books may have their hand forced a lot sooner than they'd like.
No doubt about that.
We still have one other game, and I won't use the term marquee by any stretch of the imagination to get to. It's tonight's showdown between the Rams and 49ers. But before we do so, let's talk to a guest that joins us every single week here on the Bet the Board podcast. From parts unknown, we welcome in a gentleman, and I use the term loosely, who joins us every single Wednesday and Thursday here on the Bet the Board podcast. You can follow him on Twitter at Dave Mason BOL. And Dave, we got your take yesterday on what the college football weekend looked like at betonline.ag. How were some of the decisions on Sunday highlighted by that lovely Patriots cover as road favorites against the Saints?
Yeah, I thought we could skip that question this week and go on to the other stuff, but I guess not.
You know our listeners love the doom and gloom prognosis. You know, you guys shutting off the lights. You might not be able to open business. You know, that kind of stuff.
They all hit me up on Twitter, tell me I'm whining and everything. I love it. it's a good weekend for the players. Congrats to them. Major League cap tip. The Patriots. I mean, that was just a whopper. That was, I think, the biggest. Yeah, it was the biggest afternoon game, regular season decision in the history of the company by far. And again, a lot of that also has to do with, you know, we're a lot bigger now than ever. So that, you know, we're getting more action. So these decisions are just getting bigger and bigger compared to previous years. I'll be whining even more when we lose. But no, the Patriots is massive. Buccaneers, Raiders was huge. That 4 o'clock game, the Raiders was huge. The Titans, those are the biggest ones for the players. As far as the house is concerned, Broncos, big win for the house. Everybody was on the Cowboys. 49ers was good, too. So those are the two biggest for the house. But overall, congrats to the players.
Dave, the best part, though, about last weekend is you had other sports books in the industry even calling you guys out for your number on the Patriots.
Yeah, well, I don't know what to tell you. the screen said, you know, everybody's that's 6, 5.5, and then somebody's saying, why don't we go to 7? But that's not really how it works. Sure, in hindsight, it would have been great doing that. If you keep doing that in the long run, you're gonna get stuck up your tail. So gotta keep doing what we do. Someday the Patriots are going to own 4 string and we'll be laughing, but we're waiting.
Mason, before we let you do what you do with the Price is Right coming up here shortly, tell us a little bit about the public and professional money for week 3 in the NFL.
All right, let's start with public. Got some big ones, man. It's going to be a lot of road chalk out there, and bettors are eating them up. Starts tonight with the Rams. Everybody's on the Rams. I can't wait to be a 49er fan tonight. 83% of money and 82% of the bets are on the Rams -2.5 at San Francisco. Sunday, 96% of the early money, 93% of the bets are on the Broncos -3.
Jesus.
Yeah.
96% of the tickets. Good Lord. Yeah.
96% of the money, 96%
oh, sorry. Of
the tickets. No problem. Not much of a difference there. Chiefs, big one. 86% of the money, 88% of the bets are on the Chiefs, minus three of the Chargers. And that Sunday night game is going to be massive. 93% of the early money, 91% of the early bets are on the Raiders, minus three at Skins. So you see there all that, those minus threes. When those
Easter famine week.
Yeah, exactly. You know, where if we chop, great. That's always good for the house. But, no, it's going to be that road chalk. Whenever you see those good teams that are minus three somewhere else, minus three and a half, minus two and a half, you know the public is all over them, and that's the case here as well.
Dave, do you guys like weekends like this where you're rooting for some of the dregs in the NFL to try and keep you guys out of the red for a Sunday football?
I mean, it just happens, right? I mean, the end of the day, they're going to cover half the time. They're not going to cover half the time. So, you know, the last weekend they weren't covering. So who knows, this week they could all cover and we're laughing, or if they don't cover, then we're – you just got to think long term. You know how it is, man. You can't get too caught up in one weekend, one Sunday. You just got to keep thinking long term. It is more – this early in the season is not nearly as frustrating. You know, that those playoffs last year, I mean, and the Super Bowl, that was just – holy God, because that's your last chance, right? There's only two games or four games a day or weekend, and that's your last chance with these guys. So when they're sticking it up your yin-yang – during the playoffs, it's you know, you're not getting that money back until next September with a lot of these guys, or March Madness or something. So, you know, early in the season, it's more like, okay, bring on week three, bring on week four. But so, you know, it is what it is. That's the game. As far as sharp, there's some sharp, good early sharp stuff here. Jaguars, for whatever reason, plus four, that's plus three and a half now. Titans minus two, that's minus three. Cards plus three and a half, that's plus three. Oakland, Washington over 53.5, that's now 55, and Chargers, Chiefs over 46, that's currently 47.5.
All right, this may be wasted breath here, Dave, considering how well the players did last weekend, but should any of our Bet the Board listeners need a reload or want to open an account at betonline.ag, what kind of promotions are available at the shop this weekend?
Yeah, or if you're just sitting on the sidelines the first few weeks and then missing out on all the easy money, go over to betonline.ag, promotions.betonline.ag/thebetthebord, and we have some good promotions there for you. Sign up with an account at betonline.ag. Use promo code 75BTB for a one-time 75% welcome bonus. If you already have a betonline.ag account but then I have used the Bet the Board reload bonus yet, use promo code 50BTB for a one-time 50% reload bonus. The maximum bonus is $1,000 on both of those. Once again, all the details and terms and conditions and all that good stuff can be found at promotions.betonline.ag/betthebord.
You can follow Dave on Twitter at Dave Mason BOL, and be sure to tweet at him incessantly when all of these road favorites start to cash at the window.
Hey, no.
No, you don't want them tweeting at you, or you just don't want the road favorites to catch?
Tweets, but just don't say I whine, man. You know, if we lose, I'm going to tell you we lose. If we win, I'm going to tell you we win. But I'm not whining. Come on, bring on next week. Let's go.
I want to see the back and forth, Dave. I'm interested. I mean, if we can see Santana Moss and RG3 going at each other on social media, we can see our loyal listeners getting into spats with Dave Mason.
Oh, yeah, thanks. Appreciate it.
And good luck this weekend, brother.
All right.
Enjoy Plinko.
Yeah, Plinko. Colombian girl.
Well, Payne, we know Dave hates the New England Patriots. That's become abundantly clear over the last couple seasons. Apparently this week he'll have to don as much red and blue as he possibly can for the Buffalo Bills as well.
He's going to have a couple hats on this week. There's no doubt about that. He's going to be a big Buffalo fan. He's going to be a big Raiders, big Redskins fan, rather.
Have a bevy of gross home underdogs you need to try and secure the financial viability of your balance sheet.
This will be a fun week.
It's going to be interesting. I think it's going to prove to us a lot of things we either hold to be truths or we had questions on regarding some of these pretenders, contenders, and maybe how bad the bottom of the league really is. When we talk about the Thursday night game, though, between the Rams and Niners, we've seen this number ping pong all over the place. And once we started recording, got a text about a group with quite a bit of market influence coming in on the LA Rams to push it out to a field goal. So at BetOnline, you're seeing the Rams -3, -$1.05 at time of recording. Total here, 40 at BetOnline.ag. I don't even know the first spot to go when we're trying to make a case for either side in this one.
I'm not really sure either. We know that this is going to be a game where, you know, you get that interstate battle here going on. When I look at this, I'm just such a huge fan of Shanahan, and I think he's going to have some success. Obviously, they haven't scored a touchdown to this point. I think they're going to try to establish that ground game. We know that's exactly where they had some issues last week with Washington. Donald is back, but they let go of William Hayes. They traded him to the Dolphins. He was that run-setting edge. This is going to be a Hyde game. This is going to be a game where San Francisco really tries to establish the ground game, make it easier for Hoyer. I think he's going to have some success in that regard. We have seen professional money on the under in this game. Got out ahead of that market. There's probably, man, at 41, I would have absolutely loved to go under here. But I can't make a case for that right now. When I look at the offense of the Rams, they're still struggling to run the ball. They're doing a little bit better. McVay is really getting Goff going a little bit. I know he trended downwards a little bit last week through the big interception late, predetermined that pass. But offensively, Goff is coming around. And I think there's some interesting weapons there with Cooper Kupp. For me, I kind of disagree with that move. I think there's going to be, at some point, you couldn't hold the market here. This is another game Mason talked about. Everyone in the world is going to be on the Rams here. I think at 3, we're going to see some resistance. I think there has to be.
What could possibly go wrong laying points with the Rams on the road? I mean, what better way to start your weekend in the National Football League than betting a bad team, expecting them to do good things on the division road?
I will say that, but there's also that element where you can take out that short week travel trip where usually it hinders the road team. There's not much travel here, so that becomes a factor you don't include, so you probably, you know, you remove that negative from the Rams handicap. And so that's probably worth a point. So I could that this, you know, when we're talking probably not a huge home field advantage, I can understand the line, especially is bad when you can market a team that hasn't scored an offensive touchdown. It's going to be tough to garner some two-way action. 3 was the number that it opened. We saw early professional money getting out ahead just a little bit. I just think at 3, we're going to see some resistance at some point. I don't know. Again, maybe the market can't hold resistance, and we're going to just see 3 here the rest of the way. You alluded to sharp money being somewhat on the Rams. I think we're going to see some sharp money the other way. I just don't know if it's going to appear on the screen because, again, I don't know if the resistance is going to hold on the screen.
Yeah, there may not be enough money that books can try and get to offset some of the liability going into Los Angeles.
I thought it made an attractive teaser leg, too. If it stayed 2.5, you start getting it through the 3, through the 7, it was something a lot of guys were considering. Now at 3, you certainly kind of recalibrate things and say, hey, am I going to just take 3 rather than looking at a teaser? So it's going to be an interesting dynamic here. A lot of this is moving as we're recording. So I'm going to have to reevaluate here as we get off.
With the Thursday night games, when it's divisional rivals, do you make any adjustment given the level of familiarity these teams have with one another? Or do you back some of that out because these are both new head coaches?
No, there's definitely some familiarity there. A lot of the players are the same. So tendencies are going to be a little bit the same when it comes from a player perspective. Certainly, you know, we talk about not being huge trend guys. We like the trends that make sense from a human element, right? The human element trends, they actually have some support. This does become a little bit different because you do have two different head coaches. Both of them are offensive minds. That's the biggest thing here. But usually you will get that familiarity where professional bettors are going under. They still went under early on in this week. We have two offensive-minded coaches here. So it scares me a little bit. At 41, could have made a case. Now at 39, 39.5. I'm certainly not running to it. I don't really love much this week on the card.
It's not the most attractive card in the least. And, I mean, we kind of iterated that a little bit on our college bet, the board edition, that sometimes there are weeks and you just have to hold them. There's some weeks you fold them, and there's some weeks where you're going to push all in. I don't get the feeling on either the professional or amateur ranks that this will be a weekend that you can really try and find an awful lot of investment opportunities. But that being said, is there a game that you think is a little bit better than some of the others that should get our listeners their action fix they so desperately seek come Sunday?
Well, let's do this, and I hate to keep doing this, but let's give something out on the blog this week again. Man, I hate to keep doing that, but I don't want to give out anything I haven't bet. I don't even actually have a single investment that I've made in the NFL yet. There's a couple of games we're monitoring that are around key numbers that we're trying to work on just a little bit, and we'll give something out on the blog. Now, the key here for the listeners, a lot of you can't seem to find this blog. It's not very difficult. It's actually the podcast blog. So you will just go to the podcast archive section or the homepage, and you're going to find this actual podcast, the one that's going to say week 3. You're going to click that. You're going to scroll to the bottom, and you'll see it. We'll probably have that out Sunday morning, so I would check right around that time.
So there you have it, just some not investments as we wait for some of the markets to settle in. The one thing that we'll tell you each and every episode of this podcast, and we have since the first day we came on the air, we're not here to give out bets that we're not invested in ourselves. We mentioned Kentucky yesterday in the college football podcast. That number took off as anticipated. The NFL, sometimes these numbers need to settle, and we'll get better injury information as we move forward. Payne, any updates on our Bet the Board 2017 edition swag that I know a lot of our loyal listeners are so anxious to purchase?
It's coming in.
And there's coming
not,
in, baby.
There's not much of it. We got one style this year. It's a little more professional. It's a logo tee. Everyone's been asking for a logo tee. So much better quality product this year. So the Hurricane Irma set things back a little bit. And in typical fashion, if you don't do it yourself, it ain't getting done. So this is the new fun thing of the week. We're going tagless like we did last year. Bring the shirts into the shop the other day. Guy looks at me like I got 12 goddamn heads. Says, what are the tags still doing on here? I said, hey, how are you going to figure out how to stamp the sizing? So I had to take the stuff back home, cut the tags off myself, and then bring it back to the shop. So there's a little delay in that, but I'm told next week. My feeling is I'll have, we can put them up on the site for purchase. I'll have our designer do that maybe later in the week, early next week. And then they should be in about the week after. So, I mean, we can start shipping out probably then. So we will keep you updated. We'll certainly send out links when they come out.
We'll make sure to keep everyone apprised with everything going on. Hopefully you've been checking out the website, bettheboard.net, to make sure that you're up to speed on all the great gambling articles from our talented staff of writers trying to provide bad beats, some satirical evidence of why you shouldn't go on tilt during the course of the football season, having a little bit of fun during the most exciting time to be a sports bettor. Payne, before we bid our listeners a fond farewell until we reconvene on Monday, any lasting words of advice? Sage nuggets that they can take with them, whether it's for the gambling purposes or otherwise?
No, I think we're good. Let's wrap it up. We'll see you Monday and look for the bet of the week on the website.
Yeah, check that blog come Sunday. Follow Payne on Twitter at Payne Insider. I'm Todd Furman. You can follow me there as well, of course. Our Wednesday and Thursday guest, Dave Mason. Follow him at Dave Mason BOL for all the book looks as you get closer to kickoff of these games. Sunday morning, check the blog. We'll have a ticket. We'll be able to get you to the window. 3 hours later, hopefully we'll be able to cash. In the meantime, best of luck with all your football wagers this coming weekend.